Have you lost your mojo and need some help reconnecting with what you actually want? Then my Dream Bigger Clarity tool might just help you. An audio exercise that takes just 5 minutes, this powerful little tool can help you get clear on the goals that are really important to you, not just the goals you think you should set. The Dream Bigger Clarity tool is totally free when you subscribe to my Slurp Mails. Just head to the homepage of my website, thevictoriabrown.com, to grab your copy. Ever wondered what it takes to make your dream creative business your full-time gig? Illustrator Liz Harry has done it. In her words, she carved a career out for herself doing the things she loves, creating products she designs herself, making fun props, and taking part in some amazing collaborations. If you've seen Liz's work, you'll know she's passionate about mental health, a theme that runs throughout her brilliant work. In this episode of Creative Slurp, she talks about her creative journey, her obsession with creating, and how she uses creativity as a tool to help with her mental health following burnout. I love chatting with Liz, who was so generous with her stories and advice, and I hope her story inspires you as much as it did me. Enjoy. Welcome to Creative Slurp Podcast, giving you the juice to build a successful creative business with me, Victoria Brown, a creative business advisor, former jeweler and craft fanatic. Now you're in the right place if you want to find real talk, inspiration and the best tips and strategies for your handmade business without the overwhelm. We're all about making business exciting and fun. Now buckle up and let's get started. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Liz. I'm so excited because I have seen you on Instagram for a while now. I love your brand. I love your work. I love what you're about. It's going to sound like a total fan geek moment now, but I really do.
Well, you don't know where I live and you've not watched me in my sleep. It's fine.
No, I haven't got that far yet, thank God. So you're okay. Carry on with the interview. Yeah, I'm just so pleased you could come on because I think you can, I think people will be so interested to hear your story and, you know, hear about your business. So for everybody listening, in case they don't know who you are, can you tell us a little bit about you, what you do and about your business?
Sure. So my name's Liz Harry, like you've probably already figured out by now. And my business is Liz Harry Design, very unimaginative. And I have a product-based business. I sell my products through Etsy, and I'm an illustrator, I suppose, is the most familiar term that people would understand as to what I do. But there are offshoots within that, like titles like content creator, kind of crafter, professional crafter, kind of prop maker. There's lots of little things within that as well, and probably graphic designer. So I'm a very visual person and I really enjoy sharing a lot of what I make and do on Instagram.
It's so funny you say that, and I think so many people will resonate with that real difficulty to focus, to kind of identify yourself as one thing, because as small business owners we do so much, don't we?
Yeah.
Did you ever think you'd do all those different things?
I think that very much as soon as I started my creative journey, and I was fortunate enough to go to university, I didn't complete a degree, but I did go for a couple of years, that I had a lot of interests. It always felt like it was through drawing or some sort of branding. It was always very kind of poppy, or closer linked with popular culture than anything else, and something that's quite contemporary and possibly included a little bit of nostalgia. So there was a few connective elements there that's always kind of shown up in the way that I work, no matter what I've been doing over the last 20 odd years. But being able to kind of hop from one medium to another and have this like changeable kind of, you know, way of working, it's been something that's always been an interest for me, and it's what's kept me coming back to creativity all the time.
And what made you decide to get into an illustration in the first place and art and the art world?
I was one of those kids, like from a really, really young age, had an interest in visual mediums. I loved animation, I loved cartoons, but it certainly went beyond watching Saturday morning cartoons. I was the kid that would research it and kind of find out who had made these TV shows. And then kind of was like, I knew that I wanted to, I think I was kind of very aware that at some point I would have to get a job. And I really wanted to have the best chance at having a job doing what I loved, which was creativity. So I was always drawing. And that just kind of led me to then going on to study it, trying to find careers in it that I could, you know, do maybe when I left uni. But I was always entering competitions as well. So I was fortunate through that. Not that like it was some sort of exceptional approach to competitions that got me the privilege of winning, but it was more that I was aware that there was a ways of getting information from other creatives quite early on. And that was by entering loads of competitions, winning them, and then getting to speak to actual working designers and animators and cartoonists and people like that. So I think I had directions of where I wanted to head in career-wise quite early on. And that's something that I think you're not made aware of when you're in school. I think unless you've got that kind of independent kind of research brain, or you have curiosity. In fact, more times than not, I found that teachers, and I hope it's not the case now, but news reports and everything would say that it still is. It's still something that's present in schools, that more often than not, I was tried to be talked out of pursuing creativity as a valid option for a future career. I was always swayed more towards something more dependable or something more commonplace or more reliable. It was always kind of, that's not really a proper job. And I think I was just always too stubborn-headed to kind of be swerved from it. And I'm really grateful for the younger me who wasn't swerved from it, and from my parents who supported it, knowing absolutely nothing about the creative industries. They were not artists. My mum worked in a post office and my dad worked down the docks as a labourer for the hugest part of his career. And so they didn't have anything that could springboard me into what I do now. I think it was just that they were supportive and they allowed me to explore it. I think they were probably a bit worried at times as to, you know, how I'd be able to get a job. But I think I was so just fascinated by it all. It was an obsession. It really was.
It's so funny you say that, because you hear from so many people that make a success of careers, especially creative careers, and they all say that they were obsessed by a certain thing. I remember hearing a podcast interview with Richard Osman, who obviously creates game shows and is well known for creating game shows. And he said he used to sit in front of the telly dissecting them, the same way you talked about the cartoons. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I really wanted to be an animator for Disney when I was younger. So I used to copy a lot of the, I used to find out who the animators were, and every now and again there'd be appearances on TV back in the 80s, because obviously we couldn't access things on the internet back then, and there wasn't any YouTube tutorials and stuff like that. You know, for the younger people who might be listening to this, to put it in some sort of context. So you kind of had to seek things out a bit more. And I would copy, you know, like Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, all those cartoon characters. And then I think the evolution of that was that I would redraw them in my own scenarios. And I researched, you know, how to get into animation, found some courses that were at university level. And it, strangely, though, when I did get to the point where I was able to do animation on my university course, found that it wasn't for me and that I was more interested in something that had a quicker return. And, you know, I was able to realise it much faster, which is why I got into things like silk screening and graphic design, and the fact that it did interact more with popular culture as well, because obviously graphic design is very much advertising, but it's also, you know, a lot of pastiche kind of stuff, or, you know, puns can kind of, you know, is how you probably see that playing out now. Mm. Back when I was in uni, it was all about the pastiche, but now it's definitely about the pun.
That's really interesting, because usually somebody who drops out of university, doesn't finish their course, is seen to be, I don't know, a failure or a dropout or whatever. But I think in your case, it was because you were so focused on what you wanted to do, which actually I think is quite unusual for someone that's younger.
Well, I think, to be fair, there was lots of factors that made me want to drop out. It wasn't necessarily something by choice. I think the fees came into university, mm-hmm. which was a huge game changer. Luckily, I had got on the course at the point where it wasn't fee paying, but then the year after me was going to be fee paying, and there was lots of changes that they were making within the system. But as well as that, if I'm totally honest, it was quite, I found it really male dominated. And I think that as a woman, at that particular time on that particular course, I felt that how I showed up as a creative was prescribed very much by this male dominated group of peers, or, you know, professionals that were like, no, you don't do that. What you do is this. And, you know, if you want to be cool or edgy, you know, which you didn't necessarily want to be, but that's the only thing that they would see as being valid, that you had to create in this kind of way, but effectively emulating what they did. Where, so it didn't really take into account the individual person's point of view. You know, it was very much molding in their creative practice, and that's not something that I was interested in. And I found that I came to loggerheads with the tutors. So there was a few things that contributed to me leaving in the end. And I also had an opportunity where 13 of us that had left the university course, not all like me in the middle of second year, but most of them having completed it, took over a studio space for, what was it, essentially pennies back then. It was something like £30 each a month, meant that we had a huge studio space where we could pursue our creative practice alongside doing part-time or full-time work.
Oh, that's fabulous. And that community must have been really powerful at that stage in your career as well.
It was. I think that when I go back to my self-determination and obsession, though, I think it's something that, I suppose it was a bit unique, because it's not everybody's like that. And though I found it something that was really rewarding for me, there also was a huge downside to that, in that socially I isolated myself, or would kind of rub a lot of people up the wrong way, especially, you know, when they're very much on the same path as you and at the same stage and doing the same thing. So for me, though that, and I think now that would be such a lovely environment, but walking into it as a very kind of obsessively, you know, creating kind of, I imagine neurodiverse is probably a term that I can bring into this conversation at this point, teen or young adult, I hadn't grasped how to function within that. And I think it very much was a catalyst for me to leave that environment and turn what the little bit of knowledge that I gained into my first business, which was a graphic design agency. I just kind of went for it alongside all those other jobs and started announcing myself as a graphic designer, walking into clubs and bars and asking people, could I design flyers for them? And I suppose I wouldn't have said it was confidence at the time, though it might sound like that, or it may have come across as that. It was more just absolute hunger to be doing this for a full-time job as quickly as possible.
And how did the graphic design business go then?
It went really well. I mean, obviously, it took a long time to get to a point where it was able to support me. I did it alongside my partner at the time as well. And then, you know, I worked an awful lot of hours. It was what I enjoyed the most. It wasn't like I was forcing myself to do it. It's that obsession thing again. And so because there was a lot of hours put into it and it was something that was always at the forefront of my mind, I never really switched off. I think that that was something that I inadvertently kind of benefited from. And I didn't want to go out partying. All I wanted to do was do graphic design and as much graphic design as possible. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but for me, it was what really lit me up.
You talk a lot about obsession, having an obsession with your work. Do you think that creatives need that in their work to be successful?
I think I need to put a kind of warning as well. Yeah, and I'm glad you put, because it is total obsession. It has its advantages and disadvantages for sure. There's huge downsides to having an obsessive nature and making what's your hobby, your full-time job, and also having the kind of brain that doesn't really switch off from it as well. You know, there is pros and there is cons to that, you know, that I think are fairly obvious, but in case it's not, you know, there's a lot of burnout, there's a lot of working yourself to the ground kind of thing. It's something that I don't often tire of it, you know, where I think others would. I kind of need to be told sometimes to take rest and take breaks or maybe try and switch off. It's not something that I find very easy to do sometimes, but I think it's certainly contributed to me having some degree of success in what I do and how I do it, how I go about it.
And have you ever burned out then?
Oh, yes, massively, massively. The most serious burnout I had was in 2018. I think prior to that, I very much had a workflow that accommodated short breaks or periods of burnout or periods where, say, you finish a project and then you're just doing the kind of more menial tasks or the admin tasks, even if it's like the visual admin tasks, you know, of kind of reorganizing files or what have you, that kind of stuff. So I'd have like peaks and troughs, but it's in 2018, I was making a transition from being a freelance graphic designer, which is what I'd done prior to what is the current incarnation of my business, to what I now do, creating products for my own shop and having a presence on Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And I'd started, I suppose, the business that I had now is, what do they call it? Like a side hustle kind of thing. And it very quickly dawned on me that it was the thing that I wanted to be doing, not what I was currently getting an income from, but realized to kind of bridge the gap between the two, they both had to be fed. So I was working really long hours consistently. So I would, you know, and I also have three kids as well, and they were young at the time. So I would regularly be getting up around maybe 6:30 and then doing as much work as I could while they were either in school or nursery or at home and while they're napping and everything, because I have three different ages. I can kind of tick all those boxes. And then when they went to bed, I would then continue working while they were asleep, usually until about 2 or 3 every morning, and then get up at 6 again. So there was a period in 2018 where I was trying to make the transition from those two businesses, working an awful lot and getting about 3-4 hours sleep tops every night for about 3 to 4 months. And the thing is that because I'd grown up in an industry, because I worked a lot in the music industry as a freelance graphic designer, and so I was used to a really fast pace of work. I was used to not being the person who was in control of that so much. I mean, I say that, that's an illusion. I was always in control of my choices. But I felt to kind of be the person who got the job, I wanted to keep showing up and everything. But I think that at this point, I was kind of working for both those things, to keep one thing going, to keep an income in, and then to work on the other to make this new dream a reality. And I think after about 4 months, I was coming through the Christmas season and I had planned to stop offering my freelance graphic design services after the December had passed and I finished for Christmas. I was going to start in the new year. And basically, I'd finished all my graphic design stuff. It must have been around the 10th of December. I think I must have wrapped up the last job, but then was packing all the orders for the shop and doing social media content. And so I think for that, I must have finished about the 22nd or the 21st, I remember, of December. Took my kids out the cinema. And when we came out the cinema, I had a blackout. It was really quick. Basically, I was walking, holding the two smaller ones' hands, and then the eldest was just walking alongside. And I just remember looking straight ahead and walking, and then all of a sudden, I was almost hitting the floor, basically. So it was a really brief blackout, but nevertheless, it was a loss of consciousness. And after that, I also developed vertigo. So I had a constant dizziness and you know, feeling like if I moved, I'd vomit, or even when I wasn't moving, feeling like I'd vomit. And it turns out that like something within my eardrum had dislodged, but also I was then really sensitive to any stress. I mean, I'm somebody who just doesn't take the hint to take a break. That's why I need all the visual reminders and all the content I create. In the first instance, I'm saying it to myself. So I kind of, yeah, I just needed to take a break.
So what happened then when you had that blackout? Did you decide to take a break and do things differently?
I had to move a lot slower. I was really fortunate because I was at that point where I was kind of wrapping up all the graphic design work anyway, that I was only continuing with the with my own work or the Etsy shop stuff and everything. And that was very much at the beginning of that journey. So it was less busier than what it is now as it's more established. So for about 6 months, it took a full recovery where I wasn't waking up in the mornings and feeling dizzy. Just everything had to be taken really slow. And I know now when those periods are coming on because my brain kind of, or my body steps in and I'm like, oh, I'm feeling a bit woozy. Oh, I'm feeling a bit lightheaded. I need to kind of step away. But basically now how it works, I try to stop working at a certain point in the night. I don't do that amount for sure. There is always the odd late work night, always. And it's usually to have the benefit of having a few solid clear days off where I'll falter and my boundaries will slip and I'll be working late at the night. But generally, like, I'm stopped at around like 8 o'clock, something like that. Still might sound quite shocking to some people, but it's you know, my kids don't have any after school clubs or well, they're a bit old for nurseries now and everything. There's no childcare other than me and my partner. So things generally tend to slow down when they get home from school, which we're not far off of. And then they pick up again once they've kind of had their tea and they're settled and they're just playing in their rooms. We pick up the work again while they're occupied and we'll carry on until whatever hour that is somewhat reasonable to us. And then we'll wrap it up for the day.
It sounds like you found a balance now that's working for you.
Oh, that's a very disillusioning word. I wouldn't say balance. I think
if that exists.
Yeah, I don't think it does. I think balance and happiness, you know, two of those things that you're always pursuing, you know, and the thing is, it's constantly changing. You know, those goalposts are always moving, especially on balance, because, you know, one of you gets sick, one of your kids gets sick, you know, so the balance is all completely thrown out. And you know that when that child or yourself recuperate, you've got a period of catch up. So, and you know, if you have a family life or if you have an alternative career, you don't have a lot of space to accommodate, you know, all these things that could potentially happen, especially if you're someone who's working in a business on your own. You know what I mean? There's no one else to pick up your work if you're off for the day. You know, the emails still come in, and if you're fortunate, the orders still come in and they still have to be packed. So it's kind of, I suppose, in terms of self-care, just kind of having an awareness when you're reaching a moment where you haven't given yourself any, and you do prioritize that time to stop. I do believe self-care is a luxury for a lot of people, especially with the cost of living crisis and everything that we're going through at the moment. But it is important. I know it's important to me to have to prioritize that self-care above everything else when I feel I'm slipping into a territory where I'm going to make myself unwell if I don't. And probably it probably shouldn't have to be that extreme either. I mean, it's something I should just be doing all the time anyway. But, that obsessive nature of mine of loving what I do and always wanting to do it, you know, I do just need to, I need to be coerced sometimes, and I need to have the reminders.
So what does self-care mean to you? Because you hear a lot of talk about the word self-care and what that actually means.
I think it's kind of having a moment where I'm not, where I'm giving myself respite from the busyness of life. I mean, there's some busyness of life, if for me, like having a family, that's a busyness that that cannot be switched off. You know, my kids will need things. I'll need to do that, whether I feel like it or not. But I think it's just having off days, you know, where I'm not responding to messages or DMs that are coming in on the weekend, or I take a half morning off to have a nap. And that's usually the one for me, because like a lack of sleep comes up over and over again. Or if you have a bit of a restless night, I'll try to incorporate some sort of recuperation into my week. Sometimes it's not always sleep. Sometimes it's something like going to a gallery, watching a film in the day, or watching a film in the evening even, because I don't really get a lot of time sometimes. Or it's seeing a friend in the day, where it's not then affecting my partner or my children because they're not getting to have family time. So it's stuff like that, really.
You seem to know exactly what works for you, and I think that's part of it, isn't it? Knowing what you need.
What do you do for self-care?
What do I do for self-care? Oh, that's a really good question. Turn the tables on me. It is, like you say, it's crazy because I have young children as well, and it is, you can't see what's going to happen. You just never know. Mm-hmm. What do I do for self-care? I just try to be kind for myself and just try to go with the flow and not try to get fixated on what should happen. And I also hate the word should. I really do hate the word should, because I think we're all different.
Yeah.
And I think that we've all got different needs, and it is all about tuning into what you need personally and listening to that, rather than trying to be what someone else says you should do, or an industry says you should do. They don't know, because we're all individuals. So yeah, it's hard. But I think just, yeah, being kind to myself about, you know, if I don't, you know, I have those days where you don't seem to achieve anything. What's the word achieve anyway? But, you know, those days where you don't seem to have done anything, just try not to worry about it, because there'll be other days when you think, oh God, I did all this today. And just try not to stress about it, I think. I started embedding little tiny habits as well, just like really, really, really tiny things. And I'm going to sound like some kind of guru now, but I don't want to sound like that, but just tiny things that are manageable, and that helps me personally. So things like literally doing two sun salutations before I get in the shower just stretches out my body and makes me feel awake. But they're just tiny things, because if I take, say, I'm going to do 20 minutes of yoga a day, that is not ever going to happen in a minute. And it might happen, and then I'll feel rubbish about it not happening. So I just try to have these little tiny things, because I need a bit of routine and consistency in some ways, and then that helps me.
Some self-care is not always it's not something that I enjoy, like taking a nap. I think that's great, and I love taking a nap. I love the luxury of curling up in bed when, you know, it almost feels like, oh, it's my cheeky little secret, I'm switching off the emails and I'm going to bed. But I've also regularly started going to the gym since, I think it was like September last year. I hate exercise, absolutely hate it. And every time I go, there's never a day where I'm like skipping out of bed to go. It's like, I don't want to go. And I go with a friend. She coerces me, and I don't coerce her at all. I'm trying to talk her out of it every time. But she's fantastic. She's really held me accountable on that. it's because I'm, you know, I've lost an awful lot of strength and like perimenopause kind of issues and everything. So it's like giving me a lot of strength in my legs and my arms and all this kind of stuff. And it's caused me to be in a lot of pain for it. And I'm having to see a physiotherapist alongside doing this exercise, which is 100% completely self-care, because without it I know I'm going to be in a worse condition. But it's something I have to drag my ass to all the time. Like, I need to do, you know, I have to do it. I hate it, but I will do it. And as far as shoulds, I couldn't agree more. Two shoulds that I have kind of given up on is tidying. Like tidying, I'm just like, let that go, let that shit go. And for the being a parent, ironing. Like, and it might sound really, really shocking, but as far as the kids' uniforms, I just get all, and myself, to be fair, not that I'm in any uniform, but I tend to shop for clothes that will not require any ironing. And I think there was just a point where I reached after having my first child where I was like, yes, stuff's hard enough as it is. I'm just going to get sweaters and tube skirts and everything that's the no iron option from M&S as far as uniforms or Asda from now on.
But I don't iron, actually. So I'm really lucky because my husband does all the ironing. He's not a stay-at-home dad. He's got a big job, but he's like going to be a busy job. But he's still, when I made a point when we moved in together, I really, really hate ironing. I've a passion. And I do a lot of things. I'm not doing ironing. I hate it. It takes me forever and it makes me annoyed. So he started doing it and he just still does. So I do a lot of the other stuff, but the ironing, most of the time he does it all. So I'm lucky. But yeah, outsource it, I suppose, is the other way. If you've got the cash, get someone else to do it. But yeah, ironing. Life is too short to iron. There's a good slogan.
Yeah, isn't it though? I know some people find it really therapeutic though, and they kind of like setting out that time. I suppose with a lot of parenting life or life where you have, you know, responsibilities to other people, you kind of have to carve that meditation time out almost within the tasks that you have to do. And I think for a lot of people, ironing kind of gives them that, or dusting and stuff, whereas no, sleep will give me that.
I find vacuuming quite therapeutic because it's like getting all the bits up. It's instant gratification.
Yeah, that is nice. You're right there. Yeah, my sister-in-law lent me one of them vacs. This is a really obscure chat. This has gone in a completely different direction. People who are tuning in for this, maybe small biz tips or something like that, will be like, oh, right, okay, vacuuming. No, my sister-in-law lent me a Vax carpet Hoover thing. And honestly, I was like, oh, I love this. The rugs are really soft now. It's really, really nice.
So that's so funny. I think people will find that valuable. So but it was interesting. Let's go back to talk about mental health. So you did mention it briefly, but you were saying about mental health, and that's why you talk about mental health in your work. So I wanted to touch on that. How did that mental health element come into your work so strongly? Because it is a big theme in your work.
I think, again, it's from the lack of, or recognizing that there was a complete lack of in my own life. And having come onto Instagram probably a lot later than most people, it's one of the things, you know, how there's little communities and, you know, little compartments of Instagram that you can find yourself in. I think that's one of the ones that really sparked my interest, because I think deep down I knew that I was working myself, you know, a bit too much. And because of the culture of work that I'd come from, you know, in a very fast-paced industry, I think that going into something that I was setting up myself, where I did have more control, I think I wanted to be able to give myself that. And also the acknowledgement that being a parent, you have to be more flexible. You have to be a bit slower with everything in your life because of those things that, again, come from a side that you weren't necessarily prepared for, like kids getting sick, or schools not being open that day, or book days where you have to suddenly scramble together a costume.
Yes, currently going through that.
Yeah. Never tires that one, does it? It's always like, how did it come out of nowhere, even though it's like the same day every year.
But it seems to have struck a chord with people, that mental health thing, because it seems to be really popular and it seems to be, you know, what people connect with in your work.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably something, again, that everybody, it's maybe it's something everybody else was recognising that they needed. I mean, I do think that culture at the moment has given a lot of rise to mental health issues. And obviously having come through the pandemic as well, it's kind of like, in, you know, air quotes, a hot topic. But I don't think that that's something that means that it is of the moment. I'm hoping that it's something that is, we're only going to expand on and explore more, you know, as we go into more alternative ways of working and recognizing that there's different ways of working for lots of different people. There's people who are working alongside having illnesses and being carers, again, alongside being parents, those alternative kind of home setups where you can't just go into an office and work a 9-to-5 and you'll need to carve out time for yourself to ensure that your cup is being filled and everything. I think with lots of things, it's of our current time, it's we're just on the cusp of kind of recognizing these things and realizing that there needs to be changes made. And I think that the interest and the topic of mental health has got, it is something that's not unwarranted in any way, shape or form. I think it's something that's always been there. It's just that people have a lot more awareness of how it plays a part in their lives right now.
Definitely. And I do think it is the start, actually. I do think that people just becoming more aware and hopefully that will continue. Yeah. Your style, your illustration style is so distinctive. I can notice it straight away as I'm scrolling the feed. I'm sure it's one of the reasons why you're so successful. How did you develop that? And what advice would you give to anybody looking to develop their own illustration style?
Well, first off, that's so lovely to hear. And thank you so much for saying that. I'm not, you know, it's definitely something that came about organically, though it may look like it came about a lot quicker. I think it's that kind of sleek appearance of Instagram, isn't it? It makes people look like they know what they're doing and they're really intentional. Whereas actually, the, you know, in my case, probably dithered around, tried a few things. Well, I know I did. I did dither around and try a few things, because at the point, if you scroll all the way down to the very, very start of my Instagram, you know, it was just it was a hobby. It was an interest. I hadn't formed a style. I didn't actually know what content I was, you know, or the reason why I was making it. And I think originally I knew that it always had to be about things that interest me. But originally when I started out, it was about popular culture, like a lot of illustrators draw from. And for me, it was things like musicals. I'm a Rocky Horror fan, but I love Technicolor films as well. And there's a lot of nostalgia in my work. I love vintage packaging, but and I do love puns and I love phrases. But I think it took a long time for that to evolve to how it is right now. And I think it was only from showing up regularly, whatever regularly is for everyone else, it's different. I definitely don't want to prescribe that everybody creates something and posts it to Instagram even once a week. I mean, that can be an awful lot. But I think that just kind of regularly exploring what it was I wanted to create, and then when that changed in me, or when I had something that to say, or when I discovered something that I wanted to say, that I kind of pulled on that thread. And the thing that I discovered was that I wasn't taking care of myself, and that I wanted to make a change, and I needed visual reminders for me to do that. So that's what I created. And I think, like you say, it's lovely. It's the most flattering thing that, you know, sometimes people will message me and say, this has resonated with me. Or even sometimes that they've said that it is actually one of my designs has helped them. I mean, that's the most rewarding thing doing what I do now, that, you know, because I know that when I was struggling, I took from the mental health awareness posts that I saw on Instagram, and they made me realize that I needed to take better care of myself. So if I can then, you know, continue that cycle for someone else, that's just lovely.
That's so good to hear, because I'm always a big advocate for saying that you don't, you don't get clarity on anything. You don't find out what you're doing. You don't find out your direction, your brand or whatever, until you do stuff. You have to do the do. You can't. And it's really tempting to sit there and think, I've got to know exactly what my brand colors are, and I've got to meditate on it, and they're going to come to me in a vision. But that just doesn't happen. And I think people wait and wait and wait for the clarity, and they don't take action.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's like trying on different outfits. You know, I think if you were going to an occasion, a significant occasion, and you had to find something to wear, I think it's quite unusual if you just bought something offline without trying it on or seeing it in the flesh and just going, yeah, this is what I'm getting, it's coming. I think you would try on multiple things, see what you were most happy and confident and comfortable in, and then you'd wear that. And I think being a creative or being a visual artist, it's very much the same. For me anyway, it didn't just come to me. I had to try a lot of things out, and it's very often the case I discovered more from what didn't work, or what, again, air quotes, what the failures were. I learned more from that than I did the things that were successful.
Yeah, I think people would love to hear that. And I just think it just proves that you have to get a bit messy, even though you don't want it. You have to get into the mess, which is
I was just
going
to say,
appealing.
You need to make a mess.
Yes.
It's okay to make mistakes. Don't be afraid of making a mistake, because that's how you'll learn what is working for you and what you do want to, you know, the direction that you do want to kind of carve out for yourself. But that's the thing as well. You're carving it out. It takes a long time. It's not instant. So yeah, just be patient with it. I know it's difficult, because I'm the first to say I was so hungry to kind of like suddenly decide I was going to open, well, it wasn't sudden, but decide I was going to open an Etsy shop and really wanted it to work straight away. And it was just tumbleweed for like pretty much a year. And me designing more and more and more and more things until I actually started designing and creating things that were a point of view, you know, that, and it wasn't things that hadn't been said before. I mean, all the things that I create, they've all been said before. Probably people have illustrated them before, but it's just, I've not looked externally for that. I've looked inwardly and I've tried to figure something out, and then I've said it, and it's lovely if it resonates. If it doesn't, I go, I wonder what else I can think of. Maybe illustrate that instead. And I won't deny that a part of how I've evolved since I've started doing this business has been because of the engagement that I've had back. It's because of that feedback. You know, when people have responded to it, it's like, oh, I'll evolve on this one then. I'll explore this further, because people seem to appreciate this. You know, because at the end of the day, again, I want to do this for a full-time job. I'm really, really grateful that people afford me to do this for a full-time job. The significance of that will never bypass me. It's such a gift. It really is.
That's such great advice, because what you're saying about looking inwardly to get the inspiration so that it's authentic, but then also listening to your customers, because they're the ones that are going to buy. That's the key to it, surely.
Yeah, I think it's not just one thing. I think it's lots of things. It's layered, it's nuanced. It's not one piece of advice that I could give that everyone could take and then that'd immediately work for them. It's very bespoke, and what's worked for me may not work for the next person. So it's a process of experimentation and kind of figuring out. But the longer that you do it, the more answers that you find on it, and the more you find your niche. You don't necessarily have to niche down. You might have so many interests that you're exploring lots of different things at the same time, but find the areas within that light you up, and you go for it.
Yeah, it's okay to be you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. It's lovely that that's one thing that social media has given us, that, you know, it celebrates those voices that maybe were bypassed before and overlooked. I'm not necessarily saying mine. I'm saying other minorities and everything.
Yeah. So you've done so many amazing things over your career, done so many amazing collaborations so far. What's coming up for Liz Harry?
Oh, I'm not sure what I can say. There is some really, really exciting stuff coming up, which I'm just blown away by. I have been asked to do a book cover, illustrate a book cover, which I'm really, really excited about, because I think as an illustrator, it's just one of those things. It's so humbling to be asked to put a cover on someone's book. I was actually asked about a couple of years ago to create a book myself, but I didn't feel it was the time for me, and I didn't feel that I was set up to do it. But those things are just amazing. There are collaborations coming up. There's hopefully one that I'm in discussion with at the moment with a big brand, which would be really, really exciting, which would mean I'd see my stuff on the high street.
Wow.
And I'm gonna leave it at that in case I jinx anything else.
So exciting. I'm so excited, Bruin. I can't wait to see what you get up to. If people want to find out more about you and they haven't already followed you on Instagram, where can they find you?
Oh, I was going to say on Instagram.
Instagram.
Yeah, it's Liz Harry Design, just because I really wasn't very creative at the time when I set it up, but I found that it's really worked for me. I found it very beneficial to just have it as my name. I love creative business names and tags on Insta and everything. I think it's fab. But when you want to feel a connection with someone, it's just lovely to be able to DM them and know their name. And I think that it's already like a little bit of familiarity when you don't have to research to find that person's name to then reach out to them. I think it's a really nice first point of contact when you can send a DM and you know their name already. So that's really worked for me. But yeah, I can appreciate the really creative and humorous names everybody gives their businesses. It's fab.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Liz. I know you're super busy, so I really appreciate it. And I'm sure everybody's going to find your advice and just your thoughts about your own business and your reflections really, really useful.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Creative Slurp. I hope it's inspired you to try something new in your business. If you loved it, please take the time to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you soon, and go and chase your biggest creative business dreams. You can do it.